actually generating. And as history goes on, more and more of that love, those pure, true love relationships will be generating. And we actually can find that now, become that.
I think last night and today, maybe we are talking about how we can connect ourselves to true parents, through parents or through parents' children, especially going through children's course. But realistically, it's very difficult, you know, to make ourselves really connected to true parents and always bring them into our consciousness or in a real sense. But anyway, I'll bring it to some point. I had very good parents. They're very devotional, very unconditional. But at some point in my life, I knew that they are limited. In what way? They couldn't give me the kind of guidance that I needed for my life. You know? They're unconditional, so if I go back home, and they will welcome me, you know, any time after having many children or far away, 1,000 miles away, many years. But they will accept me just as I am. And I felt I had enough love. I was secure in that way. So then when I joined the family, you know, principles say that to be reborn, I had to deny my parents, I had to deny my old good friends, you know, that I had such a rich experience of. And especially like coming from Buddhistic kind of background, the God was still very foreign, you know. Never had that relationship.
Foreign.
Not the father. And then going to pioneer mission or something, instead of missing my own spiritual parents or center director, you know, that I'm supposed to miss, I just simply missed my parents, you know, and my old friends, because that emotional tie is very strong, you know. I couldn't deny it. I tried to blame myself and saying that this is not supposed to be, you know. But it's there. And after a while, I came to America, and then I lived with one of 36 couples, and lived with them 6 or 7 years straight, you know, every day of my life with them. And then that's the time my real transformation took place, you know, emotionally, or say artistically, from the one that I was totally soaked and, you know, dipped in my parents' love, you know. So that's why it was the very tough standard to compete with, even among brothers and sisters who are so-called able figure, you know, to give that unconditional love in the name of God or in the name of true parents, you know. So that's why I had a different kind of struggle. But then when I came and then lived with this 36 couple who are close to true parents, and then be able to give that love or say, translating that to us, then I can very naturally, you know, start longing for God's love, longing for true parents, you know, to meet them, and realize that the scale or say depth of that love is far beyond just my own parents' love. But unless someone else on God's side gave that, you know, in my life, in everyday life, substantially, I don't think I could transfer, you know, transform this, make that transition really good. And therefore, I feel in our lives, depends on your background, you are looking for somebody who can surpass the kind of love that you receive, you know, in the name of God, in the name of true parents. Until then, it's difficult for you. Don't you think? You'll be pulled by the past, you're conditioned by the past. And when I didn't meet the true parents after that experience of, say, 6 or 7 years, then I felt very naturally they are my parents. And no problem about it, you know. But it is difficult. So then it becomes a challenge and the responsibility of, say, elder blessed couple, or say, 36 couple, who are around the true parents or are personally nurtured or observed their life, you know, and that how they can transfer that to us substantially. And I think that becomes a very, very important thing. So not only just to regard them, the 36 couple, as like a state organization, but more importantly, I think we have to regard them as internal labels, you know, where we can somehow get that love, you know, that is coming from through them. That's one point. And another point, so that's why even ourselves are very aware of us, how we can, with all our knowledge, somehow transfer that to you, because unless that amount of love is surpassing what you've got so far, no real reverse thing prayed for you, you know, statistically. That's a very real thing, you know, it's no concern. And another thing that just relating to her, I just wanted to say that, how can I bring joy to this God? Well, we went down so far off, you know, bottom. That's right. But even though we are so far, so miserable, maybe in the eyes of God, let's say, that we don't deserve what we call true love, maybe just miserable love, but still, in our mind, you know, in our original mind, we have a desire to offer something, say, grasp something, you know, as if to say that we are average person, good already, that we want to give something more extra, beautiful, you know, something great. But from God's point of view, who has to deal with us 6,000 years of being completely formed, say, children, even the one sign of something good happening, you know, is a great joy to God. Can I make sense? Okay, in other words, one member who had a very difficult time staying in the church because she couldn't feel she was doing anything good to God. She was just blaming herself and accusing herself and felt like she's valueless, that her witnessing wasn't great, her fundraising wasn't great, and nothing is great. Therefore, she felt like, you know, what value has God? Maybe I believe it's the church in its real authority. But then a person who counseled this sister said something like, but changing, I mean, from one point of view, from God's point of view, don't you know that God is grateful that you don't fornicate every day? It really shocked her, you know. We wish that we can give always plus alpha, plus something. You understand? Seamlessly, you know, no dirt on it, on that offering. But from God's point of view, from historical God's point of view, you know, that even the fact that you don't fornicate every day, you don't become Satan's victim every single day, you understand? That itself is a great achievement and a victory, you know? And itself is a beauty to love. So, again, we put to the concept with God, you know, that unless we become somebody, God will not accept us. That's not true. You know, in my own experience, I just wanted to put that.
I think I'm going to bring this first discussion to an end right now this morning, and we'll take a break and then we'll come back, and I'd like to share something on this matter of faith, and then we'll go on. And if you're wanting to share something, we don't have to just completely box up our sharing each discussion to certain topics. So if you had something you wanted to say, you'll have an opportunity next time. Just a couple of pieces of advice. Number one, my experience in groups like this in the past, whether it's been in a coffee shop with four people sitting together or something more like this, especially if you're not used to it, sometimes you'll sit there and you'll wonder, what can I say? I want to say something. What can I say? And what happens is you can get so wrapped up in what you think you should say or shouldn't say that you're not listening to what's being said. And I would advise that we really listen to each other, and that the person who's speaking will have something to say, and then right away, as you get involved already, you're getting out of yourself this way. That's what happens for me anyway. I still get caught sometimes thinking, no, I have something I'd like to say, some beautiful thing, you know, it has nothing to do with what's going on. So.
all these things that we have been discussing with you this morning, I pray that somehow each one of us can communicate in some way, specifically today, the way that we realize your presence, realize the reality of your attitude towards each one of us in relationship. So at the end of this day, each one of us can come with something new, something a deeper awareness that proves reality in your relationship with us. I know we're asking you to give something today, but it's not for that sake. I'm just giving for the sake that we can really give you something that normally has been.
I'm sorry, I know about without talking is much better, you know, but I got around 20 years I have questions just before I can solve, that's why I come here. First I can explain about one example. When I go to the Taiwan, and then I prepared one present for the President Zhang. That time is he is a second man. So I bring to the present to him and bow to him. So he shaken me and told me I got a great present received already. You know. So I was so surprised. This is first time. And he told me, "You give me a great present for me last night." So I was so surprised. What kind of a present I give you? On the street, he's going to buy his car's return his home. And then somebody told me, "Oh, this is Mr. Zhang, and the number two man in Taiwan." So that car is passed already. But I stand behind the car, I have to send a bow, you know. And his driver talked to him, "Oh, somebody is behind the car and bow." And then he stopped the car and take a look at, and before two or three times I met him. That's why he understanding. And then he think, everybody in front bows and all the passing the car after bow and greetings. That's why he think about, you are really like me. That's why he got the big president. So that case is very easy, you know. He's a great man and also he's a power man. He's better than old me. Whatever I can respect to him easy way. But one thing is, around this 20 years question I, sometimes I know the international gentlemen's ships or what can we do, and we have so many conference and international. That's why so we have to, before go to the international conference, and all the delegates must be training, you know. So you must first met to the, "Hey, hello, how are you this morning?" And we have to so many practice. So first I go to the join to the conference. Join to the conference. I have to do it. Everybody, you know. And doesn't matter small or big. And I first say, "How are you this morning?" But 1 or 2 days, I think I'm a foolish, you know. Why I can't first, you know what I mean? Somebody is young, somebody is not below my class. How I can do it? I cannot find out the peace of my mind. Even I can say, but I cannot comfortable myself. So, I can passing like this until. So I met to the youngster in the some of the below to the mice and students. So sometimes my driver, sometimes my secretaries. First time I say, dear listener, I say, how are you this morning? Good morning. I say first. One or two times I say, and then I think about, what about you? Huh? What about you? He think about, automatically I say, you know what I mean? That is, I cannot find out my mind is peace. So how I can solve this problem, you know? Anyhow, the most important one is human relation is, first I can open the mind, and realist I say to him is my mind speaking to him, you know? This is the best way. I know that. But if I say, realist say, good morning, how are you? And then returns, I think about how I can say first. Huh? Sometimes he say, yes, how are you? Sometimes I say, good morning. And somebody, yes. And then my feeling is, what? Next time I stop it, you know. This training session also, Mr. Lee and me, yeah, we new members, Unification Church. That's why we say first, everybody, good morning, how are you? Really we say. 1 or 2 days after. Why I can say first? Huh? My mind, really I cannot find out the peace, you know. Right? You are younger than me. Even I am late, new Unification member. What else, you know? But I cannot... I think my mind. This morning is how I can solve this problem. That's why I tried around 20 years I can follow and come. So this morning is Reverend Hostess preaching for me. And, from now on I can easily find. Everybody have a God. Huh? Everybody has God. That's why. I can easily find comfortable, you know. I say, good morning. Not him and not her. Her God, you know. If I can say, oh, whatever, young or big or old, and they got or high position, low position, doesn't matter. God is the same, you know. And Mr. Paul God and me God is the same, isn't it? Anybody God's in the same. God means not, you know, we cannot find out the difference. That's why I can a very good chance for my life. Around the 20 years question I can solve.
Good, too. I think we'll bring it to an end in just a couple minutes. And then I'm going to ask somebody, maybe a couple people, if they'd like to offer anything to Heavenly Father. Maybe I've succeeded in making a memorial God here, I don't know. Anyway, no, you know what I mean. So, but just, again, a parallel. But, you know, we say that we're the temple of God. 1 Corinthians 3:16, very famous. And especially in a fallen world, there are so many different kinds of temples. There are big, fancy ones, you know. And there are little ones. And some don't even look like temples. That, you know, just all different kinds of temples. All different kinds of temples in the world. But no matter what size, how fancy, or how plain, or how small, or whatever, is that each of those temples has an altar place where God lives inside. And sometimes, I know, it's so easy to go to the big fancy temples. Like I look at Father's temple, it's the most beautiful temple I ever saw. And it is so easy to go to him. But when you see a little dirty temple, you know, that, in fact, some temples you find
in uptown Manhattan here, there are old delicatessens that have been converted into a church because the man didn't have much money, but he wanted more than anything to serve God. So here it is. It used to be a delicatessen. But inside of there is a few chairs that he bought with a few dollars, and up in the front is a dining room table that's been converted into an altar. That's a holy place. So it's the same thing with any person. Is there are fancy temples that are obvious, and there are very plain temples. And also, when we add the fact of fallen nature, temples get dirty and sometimes out of shape. But beyond all of that, inside of that temple is the altar place where we can come to God. And one cannot find that altar place without going inside. And that is the thing. In our relationships, how far do we really enter into one another? In a temple, usually people come through the door here. The altar is all the way back here. You've got to go a long way. But I'll tell you what people do when they don't really want to worship. They sit in the back row. That's what happened in my Baptist church. People always came in and sat in the back row. And it was usually the guys that had been smoking or saying dirty words all week. Because you don't want to get close to God up there, because you know He's up at the altar. We'd sit in the back row when I was a kid, and we'd draw pictures, paint eyeglasses on Moses from our Sunday school papers, you know, and make word bubbles that said bad things, you know, Moses talking to Joshua, things like that. We sit in the back row. And I think many times, well, okay, let us say that before we start living a true religious way of life, we could just stand at a distance and look at this dirty temple. We didn't even know it's a temple of God, just dirty people. Say, yeah. But you start living a life with God, and then you realize, I've got to enter into that. Relationships is a big part. But where do we choose to sit down? At the back of the church, or here, or here, or here? Really, you know, it's always moving, but you see those devout believers, sometimes a little old lady, she makes the walk all the way to the front of the church, going all the way inside, and sitting right in the front row, because she wants to directly come so close to the altar, where God is. And the same thing in our relationships is, how far do we go into that person? It's so easy to sit in the back row and fool around. But to really go inside, and this is a dangerous trip. It's not like a physical building. It's in a sense a dangerous trip, because it's like if you go into them, they go into you too. But to come to the front row, to the altar, one has to go all the way. And this is where that most holy place in any person is, where God dwells here. And I find, looking back in my own experience, how many times this lack of courage to really go inside of the temple. And it is a lack of courage many times. So, I think in this matter of faith in God, being able to make the whole journey to where God is in someone is so important, particularly in the role of leadership. Leadership is something far more profound than simply setting the schedule up every day or being a good example, even something even more than that, or doing great things or giving great speeches. But how to enter into the temple that deeply has a great deal to do with leadership too. So, and it's not just official leadership. Not official. All forms.
So I'd like to share just a little bit . Maybe it would be good if we could move this. Taco, do you want this, sir? Huh? You need it? Okay, can I just move it out a little bit?
I think in introducing this subject, I'd like to share, or just to say one thing, and that is that we both agreed, and we didn't want to turn this talk into a talk on chapter 2 problems, because generally that means, well, I think you know what it means, chapter 2 problems. And it has such a strong kind of, that whole terminology has such a strong connotation already, and is sometimes overused and I think oversimplified. And if we talk about love problems, I think we want to speak in a bigger sense or broader sense, and then of course bring that down to some particulars, but start out more fundamentally. We hope we can give sort of a good broad picture tonight. Not I don't mean general or vague, but I mean really kind of approach it from a root and come forward from that. To begin with, I would just like to speak historically for a few minutes. Huh? Is it warm? No? See, all the people that have been in Africa are saying it's just perfect. I'm worried if it gets too warm here, our love problems will turn into sleep problems. So. Yeah. If we talk about love problems, the whole of mankind, all of history has them. Nobody is exempt. Even God has a love problem. I didn't say God has a chapter 2 problem. He's struck by lightning. But his love problem is that he doesn't have that deep love of his children yet. So basically everyone, even Messiah on earth, has a love problem. But looking at the love problem of fallen man, it's unique rather than God or a sinless Messiah. Because fallen man is in the position of, in a sense, lost children. And I'd like to make a comparison for you. I'd like to use this comparison tonight of an orphanage. Just briefly to open up, and then I'm going to turn it over to Taco. But if you reflect back, the first parents of mankind that were extremely important in terms of setting the pattern of parental love were lost. And there never were first parents who could represent God's direct love to their children. They fell, they were seduced, and they fell completely into the realm of sin or Satan. And their descendants, of course, were fallen as a result. So that this parent's position has been empty throughout history. There have been no parents on earth. Now there have been, of course, parents in the biological sense, and certainly many parents who deeply love their children, even sometimes sacrifice their own lives for their children. But if we understand and know the principle to be true, the first parents, or those parents that would be perfected and in the direct dominion of God's love, were not there and never have been. And so, essentially, all the parents of history are in the same position. No one really is in the parents' position. It's all children. Children without true parents. Even 80-year-old great-grandparents are in the position of children without true parents. And so, when you think of a world without any parents, or tradition of parents, it's like one big orphanage. There have been 70 billion kids that have come through this orphanage. and those kids have grown up and they've married each other and they've given birth to other kids, and generation upon generation has come. But as I say, it's all occurring in this great orphanage. And there are very beautiful things that happen here in terms of love and so on. But again, in terms of that original ideal of God, that has never happened. And so in God's eye, as I say, it's like an orphanage. And simply, God cannot preside, or God cannot have dominion of that orphanage. Not directly. The direct dominion, you might say the manager of the orphanage, is who? Sorry to say it. Isn't that a disgusting thought? Huh? Like Oliver Fagan. And so here are all these children in the orphanage. And there's many ways to look at this. We could take one morning sometime and go into more details. They're divided, these children are divided into religious groups. You might say, as Father says, oftentimes different religious camps, different classes oftentimes. They've divided themselves oftentimes into different tribal or racial groups or whatever. You know how orphanages have different gangs that run around and fight each other? Do you know what I mean? Well, it's the same with this planet Earth orphanage. It's got all these gangs that have banded off. And of course, historically, today, we find there is a gang called the Communist Gang, led by Duke Andropov. And there's the Reagan Gang, and so on. This sounds ridiculous, I know, but the largest reality is that nobody wins here in this orphanage, because it's an orphanage. And until parents can be located to bring God back into a direct dominion through parents, the orphanage will remain. And this is a no-winner orphanage. There's no winners here. So that's our largest reality. Parents never were established. And as I say, Satan, who was never supposed to be there, came into the dominion. So the point is that our true parents coming today are knocking at the door of this orphanage, taking children out one by one, seeking to take them out one by one. And it's a painfully slow process to get them out. There's a whole new race being formed, and that's what Father calls the love race. It is literally, this is not just a catchy slogan or some, you know, kind of humorous little words that Father thought up. In my understanding, this is a new race of people. It's a qualitative race of the heart. And it's not a color, it's not a certain culture, but it's a race that is defined by its heart, ultimately. They really come to solve the love problems of mankind. But what I want to do, rather than just speak about this, is I want to take one particular problem that has existed in this orphanage. And that is this: that without parents, without true parents, and without the tradition of true parental love, well, you know what happens. When orphans can't feel true parental love, they're hungry for some kind of love. An orphanage is one place where you find many love-hungry people. And so, even though in this orphanage there are families, and there are, in a sense, parents, in the fallen world sense of the word, they couldn't give to their children really that root of love that true parents could give.
if that position had been established, and if the world was full of true parents and no orphanage. And so without that root of parental love in people's lives, people come out of those families, grow up being hungry for love. I don't mean to say that everybody came out of a loveless family. Many of us came out of very deeply loving families. But again, when you compare even a loving family in this fallen world with the love that true parents would offer, and I don't just mean true parents meaning Reverend and Mrs. Moon, but I mean if Adam and Eve had been true parents and true parents had reigned throughout history, when you compare that, it's two entirely different levels of love. And so someone who is growing up out of a family where they haven't gotten that deep food of true parental love, they may leave that family at the age of 16 or 17 and be extremely hungry for love that they should have got when they were 6 or 8 years old. Do you understand what I mean? The love that a person needs when they're a little child is entirely receiving love. But you find people in the world, and I dare say we can number ourselves among them, that have come out of a family when they're 18 or 19 years old, never having fulfilled that desire for the love that a little child wants. And so they come out of that family at 18, 19, 20 years old, just love hungry, like little children. And because that foundation of parental love wasn't there, go through their life looking for it. And this becomes a real problem when one has gone through puberty and reached sexuality in their lives. Because then one is no longer looking for a mama or a papa. One is looking for lovers. And it's not enough just to sit on daddy's lap or mommy's lap anymore. The problem of immorality is not a root, it's an effect of the failure of parental love. That was the root of the problems of mankind to begin with, the failure of our first parents. And so this problem of chapter 2 really goes back to a fundamental problem of chapter 1 never having been completed. So when we look forward, and I'm going to leave it at this and turn it over to Taco, when we look forward to the kingdom of God or this new age, and as we look at our own lives, objectively, our problems are chapter 2 problems. But subjectively, the real problem is how to make this whole theory of creation a reality in our lives, chapter 1. That's the biggest problem we've got. Right now, looking into the children's age, our biggest problem is not how to solve chapter 2 problems, but really dealing with how to turn this fantastic idea that we have been drawn to, the principle of creation, how to make a union with this. And without doing that, no matter how much we struggle and struggle trying to overcome our sickness, we never do it. People have struggled for the last 6,000 years. And so I'd like to leave it at that and just say that we have a chance today to get out of the orphanage. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Taco.
Area to cover. I asked at the time, and it was 45 minutes, he said. So I don't know, bring the many cases, you know, on and on. But what I've noticed in a church after quite a few years in dealing with what we call chapter 2, it's always in a very negative approach, just in one word. You approach this problem with fear, with the guilt, and a lot of self-accusation involved. And the way leaders dealt with these problems, or brothers and sisters around it, was again necessary ideal to solve the problem.
So as a result, people who are caught in that were, you know, happened to be in trouble, had no place to really express. So their problem was merely suppressed, and therefore became kind of secretive between those two. And at most, people can do is judge how that is not right, and then maybe separate those two into different missions, or just kind of physically not together. But again, that didn't give any kind of solution. As a result, people who had that trouble had to live with the guilt, and yet no solution, no alternative was given. So according to what David was saying, that I think, but in other ways, it's very contradictory, because we are talking about man's perfection in terms of achieving three different kind of love, or triple objectives in a love, encouraging that relationship, and at the same time, brothers and sisters have to love together, have to create one family, you know? So I always felt there was no proper guidance, you know? It was like just putting ribs on that problem and don't let it out. I never dealt with it. I think you have similar experience, you know, in your center. So then the center atmosphere, sometimes the leader gets very self-righteous in going after this chapter 2 problem. And like David said earlier, try to solve this problem through fallen nature, all the time bringing out the fallen nature, you know, in membership, bring the whole atmosphere down, you know, try at last to say the more through self-accusation, judgment, blaming, you know, defense, yeah. So, I think what we want to do here is, I don't have time to develop in many ways, but it's a little bit different approach. What's more that, maybe we can open up the question. How we can, I think many of you, I don't know, unless you are in a problem right now, but many of you are blessed, and probably you're focusing on a different place. But regarding yourself as, let's say, a future leader, or at least older brother or sister, who has to guide younger members who get into trouble, how to guide them, how will that become a very important issue? So I want to approach this problem rather that way. Of course, that would apply to yourself too. And